All right, are we going to record this thing?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm recording the whole time. Oh, Nicole. So if there's anything good in there, I'm going to keep it.
Oh, Nicole.
I don't remember what we say until I listen to it back.
That's so funny.
You're listening to Pop the Kettle On with Nicole Essio and Dr. Rachel Bushing.
Hey, Rach.
Hey, Nick.
I would ask how you doing, but are you wanting me to ask? I don't know.
It's all good.
It's all good?
We're coming out of a week of lockdown. No, hang on. Not a week. Was it two and a half days?
Yeah, I know.
2.5 days.
But for a lot of people, it felt like a week.
Yeah, it felt like a month more. To me.
And, you know, there are others in the world who are still locked down. So, yeah we get away with a lot having done very well with our COVID situation. That's why I think it's so shocking.
Yeah. So here in Brisbane, we had a snap lockdown ahead of Easter.
Mm-hmm.
All because of, from what I can tell, a doctor at the Princess Alexandra Hospital, something to do with a hens party in Byron Bay.
Yeah.
I don't know if these two matters are connected.
Marginally connected, I think. I don't know. But yes.
They had to cancel Blues Fest.
Which is horrible. I just feel so bad for that.
Yeah.
But the great thing out of this that can only make people laugh is that, you know, this particular tradie on the Gold Coast has been outed as moonlighting as a male entertainer at hens nights. I mean, of all the things, at least you can have a little giggle at that.
That's true.
Right?
That's right. And, you know, Byron Bay is made for hens parties, so we can we can hardly blame anyone.
No, exactly, exactly. But that does not diminish the fact that it has been challenging, that kids missed out on the last week of school or the last few days of school.
Yeah.
And you know, that this whole thing, Rach, is bloody hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for everyone in different ways, that whole, you know, same storm, different boat thing. Some people's boats are made of two pieces of bamboo and a bit of string and that's it. And they're holding on for dear life.
I'm sticking my hand up.
Yeah? You got a bamboo raft.
I'm trying to rebuild, man.
Yeah.
I'm trying to rebuild.
I know. I'm going to throw some more bamboo at you. Hope it doesn't sink you.
We were just chatting just before about my pity party and tantruming.
Yeah.
I haven't had a great week, but
there is a pity party bench at our house for you to sit on anytime you like. And you get to stay there for a bit until we have to cook dinner because it is actually the kitchen bench.
I think I'd like to curl up on your pity party bench.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. But after a while, people get hungry and they decide that you can no longer be having a pity party and you have to get over it, which is not very helpful.
All right. Is this perhaps relevant to Moxie pity parties?
It's interesting. I suggested Moxie because the kids watched it and loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had kind of watched half of it and I have now watched the entire film.
Uh-huh.
And my love for Amy Poehler just cannot grow any further, but then it does. I think she's amazing. So Moxie, it is a film on Netflix.
Yeah.
Amy Poehler co-stars, I guess. She's not the main fixture of the film, but she co-stars in it and is also a producer of it and is brilliant and a lifter of women. And I love her for that.
Yeah.
What did you think, Rach?
What did I think? Mm. Watched it twice.
Ooh.
Watched it on my own. Had that experience of kind of, because you don't quite know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
Sort of sitting there watching, going, Am I liking it? Yeah. And then I think I sort of watched it late at night on my own.
Mm.
And then I sort of found in the next couple of days, I was like, yeah, I really liked it.
Yeah.
I think my husband and my 9-year-old daughter need to watch it.
Yeah.
So I made them.
Excellent. Making them watch films.
And 9-year-old daughter loved it.
Yeah, fantastic. Yes, we had the 10 and 8-year-olds who loved it too. Not so much the 8-year-old. He wasn't so excited about it, but 10-year-old loved it. We just did a rewatch and my mum watched it with us.
Oh, gorgeous.
Yeah.
Oh, so 3 generations.
Yeah, she really enjoyed it too.
Uh-huh.
So for me, I'm watching it and going, I can definitely see some things here. Mm-hmm. Like female rage.
Female rage.
Female rage.
Yeah.
It doesn't know what to do with itself.
So plot. So it's based on a novel, right?
Yeah, didn't realise that at the time. But
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and then I think Amy might have had something to do with the adaptation for the screen as well, in terms of kind of how it was put together. Mm. So it's based around a Greater Lebanon in somewhere in America, which is really unnamed.
Yeah, just random place, random American everywhere town.
Random American. I noticed it was kind of winter, but it wasn't really snowing.
Yes, and yet it was kind of like.
Yeah,
so I don't think we're in California if they're going to school in September and they're wearing jackets and it's cold.
I think it was almost intentional to place it. Could be anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
So the main character is this girl, Vivian, and so she lives at home with her single mother, and the mother's played by Amy Poehler.
Who I love, can I just say that
again? Yes, who Nicole loves.
Love him.
Love affair forever. Yeah, so things are happening at school in the modern world, and at this enlightenment of Vivian, as she begins to realise that perhaps some things in terms of gender stereotyping and gender roles and sexism at her high school is not all as it should be.
Yeah, beginning with a rating system.
Uh-huh.
It seems so American high school far-fetched, but I know that these were conversations that happened at school when I was at school, you know, about different people and how we can, you know, quote unquote, rate them.
So nothing that was published?
Nothing that was published, no. Well, that I'm aware of.
Do you know, actually, let's keep going with the plot and we'll circle back to that. And so Vivian decides in a moment of emboldenment. She asks her mum, I love this, the indifference to your parents, kind of what they were like growing up. As though
they didn't exist until you existed.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so she's like, hang on a minute. My mum used to kind of talk about, you know, lyrics to some song when I was little. What was that all about again?
Yeah.
Rebel Girl by Bikini Kill. And she's like, she goes and finds her mum's old trunk full of
misspent youth.
Yeah. 90s riot girl type feminist. And so she finds this series of zines and has her idea that she's going to make her own zine called Moxie.
Yeah.
That she's going to write and distribute. Oh, collage, because that's an important part of zines.
Of course.
Write, collage, copy and distribute around the school. I suppose how that evolves and people's response to it. And very cute.
And the way in which that the zine becomes a real lightning bolt for a whole lot of really appalling behaviour within the school, and that they get to use that zine to communicate that out and communicate the ideas that this is not actually a fair system that we're playing in at this point. And I think that's, it's really interesting.
Yeah. What I didn't like at first was the segregated cliques within the school. I think that one of the opening scenes is like Vivian's kind of walking into the school and it's like first day of grade 11 and like people are like mysteriously dancing in groups. And I was like,
I'm sure this happens in real life.
American high school tropes.
Yeah.
But actually, I think watching it full circle, really, it's about this idea that it kind of starts with this idea of segregation between the groups and actually about unification and coming together.
And the intersectionality.
And basically everyone hates jocks.
Yeah. Well, they hate a particular jock for particular reasons.
And you do know who the actor is. Well, his name is Patrick Schwarzenegger.
Yes, I know. I saw his name on the credits this time because I didn't watch from the start last time around. And so I saw the Patrick Schwarzenegger thing and I'm like, oh, he's the son. But yeah, I didn't realise that was the guy.
Yeah.
So he's the one who plays
Arnold Schwarzenegger, Maria Shriver's son.
Plays the the lead boy kind of character, the lightning rod for
really is really good in the role, I think. Well played.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think it's all really well acted and, as you say, intersectional.
I love that when we see it.
Yeah.
And they come together based on an idea, not on an identity necessarily.
Yeah.
And I think that coming together around an idea is really lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And they all can share in that idea and share in the fact that they've got skin in the game.
Yeah.
You know, I love the idea that you can be anyone and lead.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's this whole thing around leaders have to be a particular kind of person. And, you know, specifically in Western democracies, it's long been you've got to be a white man of some means who's not come from a particular working class background but has a middle class kind of upper class thing. Showing, depicting that leadership comes from actually leading, being someone who stands up and calls out when things are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be the charismatic white guy to do that. You can be anyone to do that. And yeah, it takes a whole lot of courage. And she, Vivian, you know, spoiler alert, we are going to talk about it, obviously. She is not the kind of person who would have the courage to do that publicly. And so starting this zine and doing it under the radar was her way in to being that the kind of leader that she needed to be. And I love that. I love that it says, you know, you can be from any background. But if you see something wrong, you can call it out.
I did sort of like read a few think pieces about it, and there were a few kind of saying really cynically that it's trying to appeal to sort of Gen Zs, but probably is more appealing to Gen Xs.
Yeah.
I'm a cuspy, by the way. Yes, I sit between Gen X and millennials.
I am X all the way. The end of X.
Well, I don't have that. I don't have sentimentality around the Bikini Kill Riot Girl kind of stuff. And I don't know, was it around when you were, did you feel feminist uprising in the 90s when you were in high school?
I did, and I don't know where it came from. So, like, I really do not know where it came from. I must have been reading things. I must have been seeing things. I mean, I remember grade 10, so we're talking 1992, doing a whole SOAS assignment around reforming abortion law. So I would have been 14, turning 15. And my teacher, I'm saying, you know, I've got to write to family plan. Like, there was no internet. I had to write to family planning to get some information. And she was like, no, I'll do that for you. Because she didn't want them to have my name. Because, you know, we'd just come out of a very 5 years earlier, had come out of a very conservative government 3 years earlier that used to keep files on everybody who they thought were troublemakers, and, you know, talking to family planning made you a troublemaker. And so she wanted to protect me from that, I guess, which was really funny, but she got the information for me. So I was railing against, you know, backyard coat hanger abortions in 1992. I don't know why. I honestly don't know where it came from. But this railing against things that I thought were unfair, it's this deep sense of, that's just not fair. That's not right.
Do you wish you'd started a zine?
I would have had to have written it. I would have had to have drawn pictures. You know, I'm much more, I could just talk. Why do you think I have a podcast and not a zine now?
I understand. Why do you think I'm like completely and utterly inarticulate on the podcast frequently?
You are not.
I'm much like Vivian. Much like Vivian, yes.
Yeah.
The introvert who would rather write than speak.
Whereas I was...
I kind of wish I'd written a zine.
Yeah, you do?
Yeah. Yeah.
What would you have written your zine about, Rach?
Well, actually, circling back, right, the first time I ever saw a zine or any of this kind of activism was probably when I went to the University of Queensland as an 18-year-old and swanned around the campus, and they have all the little kind of clubs and stuff like that. So I think I remember picking up materials and being actually like really excited because there were these zines and stuff like this, and there was all sorts of them. There was like environmental ones, and there was like women's lib kind of ones and everything. I felt like it was a bit of a old dinosaur of an institution within the university. It wasn't a very busy place. Would you like a cup of tea? What would I have raged about as a teenager? I think that, like Vivian, there is so much that we could have raged about, but it never occurred us to. And I'll give you a couple of examples. When I was in high school, the idea of non-consensual date rape was not uncommon. And ashamedly, one of my best friends told me about something that had happened to her at a party with someone she was having certain consensual acts with, and then he did something else that was not consensual. And, you know, I was probably 16 at the time, and as was her, and I was like, that sucks. And I didn't have anywhere to kind of box that into.
Well, you would never have had the language.
No.
Because no one would have talked to you about consent at school. Sex ed was always mechanical about how babies are made and how you avoid getting diseases, but not anything about anything useful.
And this particular man was probably one of the most popular guys in school. Wow. It was a total Schwarzenegger kind of situation.
Mm.
And I think we and other women did what women have done for centuries, which is to go, hey, steer away from that guy.
Yes.
Have those private conversations.
Mm-hmm.
But there was certainly no, like, there was absolutely no methodology to even think that you might take it to the police or go public with it.
Yeah.
Second story. So my first year at university, I lived off campus and was exposed to the big university world. Second year, my two flatmates quit uni and went back to the Gold Coast.
Of course they did.
And I found myself without a place to stay and ended up living on campus for my second and third year at University of Queensland. Yeah, they had a internal newsletter in which the boys were the only people on the editorial team.
Amazing.
And what kind of stories do you think they would write?
I don't even want to know.
I mean, it was basically like Gossip Girl. Written by boys. And I won't say that there were ranking lists of like who had the best boobs and the best butt and all the rest. But I will tell you there was some pretty undignified storytelling.
Yeah.
In which the boys had clearly gone around having chats, locker room chats to themselves. And then thinking, we are so clever and interesting that our locker room chat needs to be published in written form and distributed to the 300
witty populace. And charming and fabulous. We should tell everybody about it.
Absolutely.
Aren't there people at college who are supposed to be, who are they? In the US, they call them RAs. I don't know what it stands for, residential assistants or something. Are there not people like that?
They're
all left to your own devices.
There's a code of conduct. There's a residential agreement. There's that kind of stuff. And look, you know, it's not fraternities. Like, there's not that kind of overlay. It's more of a group residential setting.
Right.
It's, and of course, like when you look at sexual assaults on campus type things that have like been in the news in recently, particularly in the US, there is a whole conversation around who does hold the ultimate, where's the chain of command and who does hold the responsibility for what happens within these institutions that sit within a larger institution, which is the university.
Yeah.
It might have even been called a dean, the person who headed it up, because they all, as official colleges, they're official colleges of the university.
Yeah.
So it's different from, you know, something that didn't exist when I went to uni, but has popped up now, like little apartment blocks,
student accommodation,
which are like clearly kind of privately owned,
commercially run.
Correct. Mm. And I don't imagine suffer from the same kind of problems that happen at the on-campus institutions.
Well, I'm sure they do, but perhaps there's even less of a mechanism, or maybe there's more of a mechanism because there's less of a, we have to protect the history somehow.
Yeah.
BS, you know, it's that real weird.
Yeah.
We cannot tarnish the reputation.
Yeah.
Even though that reputation is built on crap in the first place quite often.
Absolutely. And to articulate the kind of, and I really loved living on campus, actually. I don't really felt, I didn't, even though I was named sometimes in these newsletters, in an unflattering way.
Wow.
I didn't really feel, I think my approach to that was, you stupid boys, whatever, printing your lame masturbatory thoughts about things.
Mm.
And, you know, I don't feel like it really bothered me. But, you know, again, of course, it's horrible and it's disgusting and I'm sure is not allowed to happen
but
anymore.
Also you were conditioned to not be bothered by it.
Absolutely. And what was very, very clear is that there was this sense of the popular boys were the ones setting that cultural tone and calling all the shots.
Yeah.
And I think might have even made up, you know, I think there was like a social committee or something like that, you know. I mean, a lot of it was fun because me and my girlfriends would kind of dress up in matching outfits for particular things.
Nice.
And, you know. But yeah, there was a huge like binge drinking culture and there was a huge encouragement of everybody having a lot of casual sex as much as possible. But of course, the boys kind of get lauded for it and the girls get slut shamed for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, that was late 90s Brisbane college life.
Yeah, I don't know that it would have been unusual to the time nor the situation.
To speak about what is happening in Australia at the moment in terms of a lot of women being pissed off.
Yeah.
there has been a series of things recently. So a lot of information coming out of our the seat of federal politics in our country in Canberra, where there's been a series of horrible, disgusting reports coming out in recent weeks.
Yep.
And there was also a really seminal event, you know, based around this whole kind of thing of, is there a problem perhaps with, you know, private school boy male institutions within the elite wealth in Sydney?
Yeah.
Perhaps are they sexist?
Yeah. So intersections of a couple of things. Hello, dog. There was alleged rape within Parliament House that was pretty horrifically covered up, followed pretty quick succession. Is that a female dog? She's really upset. She's feeling the rage too. So after these alleged rape, this rape allegation came up out of Parliament House, there was also a woman in Sydney who had started this blog, I guess, of one or a protest of some kind online about experiences that women had had with private school boys.
Yeah, something along the lines of, you know, shout out if you personally have had an incident of sexual harassment or assault from someone who attended a private school, all boys private school in Sydney. And everyone was like, yep. Which is actually about the origins of the Me Too movement, was to say, yes, all women have experienced this.
Mm-hmm.
Not all men
are
the perpetrators. However, at the same time, apparently these male perpetrators must exist, but no one knows them.
Mm-hmm.
But the women do.
The women certainly do, and they talk, women talk. And that stretched then to the UK. And then, of course, after that happened, Sarah Everhard was horrifically murdered, assaulted and murdered in the UK. And there was this groundswell, this absolute cry from women that they just had enough.
Yeah.
They'd had enough. Women's marches were organised in Australia, obviously, where there was, you know, fewer COVID risks. Vigils were held in the UK where there was greater COVID risk, and yet police actually really handled that badly. Paul and I went to the Brisbane March and it was affirming and emotional and amazing because it was a rainy day and there were thousands of us, thousands. And it was really amazing to be a part of that moment.
I wish I'd gone.
Yeah, but, you know, people went.
Yeah, I know, I was working.
Yeah. but it really spoke to a rage that is building within women.
Yeah.
That they have really put up with stuff for a very long time.
And talk is not enough.
And talk is not enough. Enough is enough.
Yeah.
Talk is not enough.
Yeah.
I had lunch with a colleague and she would be in her 50s and we were talking about something completely unrelated, you know, and she said, I don't know about you, but I don't know what to do with my anger. I said, oh my goodness, that's, I don't know what to do with my anger, Rach. I feel such rage and anger at the way in which women have been treated for so long.
Yeah.
And the way in which so many men have avoided consequences for that treatment. Yep. I mean, when we talk about Parliament House and the alleged rape, yes, the alleged rapist it no longer works there, but actually left with two glowing recommendations from, you know, previous ministerial employers. Another woman who was calling out a lot of sexism within the Conservative Party within Australia, who worked in Parliament House and was having a relationship with a minister, also no longer works in Parliament House. The alleged rape victim no longer works in Parliament House. None of the ministers faced any consequences for not, I mean, they've now been demoted, but they're still in cabinet. None of the men who covered this up or who aided and abetted the situation have faced any consequences. You know, we talk about there was a scandal where an Australia Post CEO, as a thank you, spent $20,000 on her credit card buying some watches for her staff.
Yeah.
She was pilloried and had to go immediately. And yet, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars of ridiculous, wasteful spending has happened on you know, ministers' watches, and they've not done
or been faced with any consequences. I am sure the culture within Canberra, in Parliament, and within these corporations is exactly the same as what I experienced in my university college.
Mm.
I'm sure it's exactly the same.
Well, it's extraordinary to me that, you know, I mean, we had years ago the head of a particular retail organisation, David Jones, who was found to have sexually harassed a subordinate and, you know, was made to go. And honestly, it's Phoenix rising every time.
Yeah.
You know, like 6 months later, he was heading up another corporation.
Yeah.
There's this protection racket. There's this whole system that says that you can bear the consequences if you just wait it out a little minute.
Sure. Which is just like in Moxie. Mm. Where Schwarzenegger goes to the principal and says, "Can I have a special announcement in, over the kind of loudspeaker?"
Yeah.
And the principal, I mean, she's just great, isn't she? What's her name? Jean?
Marcia Gaines-Harden.
Oh, is that who it is? I was going to say Jean Triplehorn.
Oh, right. Yeah, no.
No.
Similar.
Similar. Okay. Similar, similar, similar. Yes, of course it's Marcia Gaines-Harden. She's wonderful. Again, wonderfully cast, wonderfully acted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and her attitude is just kind of like, well, I mean, the jock guy asked for it.
If and you'd asked,
the
then...
girls are like, we don't know. We don't know how to claim power.
Yeah.
That's not something that's within our DNA that's been socialized from a young age that all you need to do to claim power is just stand up and be male.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the rule of the game are completely different. How do you feel about our PM then saying, "I understand because of my wife, my mother, and my daughters"?
Yeah.
And you don't have to implicate yourself here. you can give a PC answer if you would like.
There's no PC answer to that. Mm-hmm. There's no PC answer that says the only way that I can understand things is through my relationships with women. Mm. I can't, as a human being, understand that being raped is a bad thing. Like, it beggars belief.
Yes.
And then to announce a reshuffling of a cabinet and to inadvertently, you know, put so many different women in the title of so many different cabinet positions, you know, women's safety and minister for women and all this sort of rubbish, and then say, you know, the person to your left in this presser is the prime minister for women, and accidentally let that slip and then go, oh crap, what that actually means if I think about it really clearly is that I'm the prime minister for men and I don't represent women, and oh shit, I need to walk that back.
He has
see him trying to
no
swallow.
Idea.
He really has no idea.
And the more that he tends to get advised by people going, here's what you say, here's what you do.
Yeah, cannot
just
follow it through.
Cannot even follow the instructions.
I'm waiting for a guest piece from Ben here, who's just seething. I can see you seething behind Rach there, Ben.
Your job as Prime Minister is to be this father figure for all women, not just your women.
But it's amazing that men can have historically, in these leadership positions, felt that they could be a representative for all people.
Mm.
But as soon as Julia Gillard became Prime Minister, then she could not possibly understand mothers or parents because she didn't have kids, or she couldn't understand men, or she couldn't understand people who, you know, did other things that weren't, you know, lawyers who went into politics or whatever.
Yeah.
But men can understand all of the things magically, but she could only understand her, you know, single woman, career-driven kind of deliberately barren experience.
Absolutely.
It defies belief. But anyway.
And all of the kind of lies they tell themselves about why we don't need quotas and why, you know, none of this stuff really exists. Like, you know, of course, my intentions are not to .. So therefore it is not having that effect on people.
But entitlement breeds entitlement, and you don't realise you're entitled and that you have privilege because things have just naturally happened and made.
And they don't want to understand that perhaps they are not the kings of the world, and that's why they have privilege, that actually they've been given a big boost up. So my gorgeous little 9-year-old, it's so lovely to see her little smash the patriarchy self come out. She happened to have a teacher last year that took them through a few, I don't even know if this was grade 3 curriculum or not, or just her, but she, every now and then my daughter tells me these little stories of like, Miss such and such was telling us about how her great-grandmother was a suffragette.
Oh, that's amazing.
And this was our dinner conversation the other day about suffragettes and what does that mean and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, women could not vote or hold office at all.
I know, which is extraordinary. I loved in Moxie, we were talking about his behaviour. And someone was saying how annoying it was. Yes, it's annoying. Someone else was talking about how it's it's actually dangerous. Mm-hmm. It leads to things, you know. Mm-hmm. The friend, the new friend Lucy was talking about, no, it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. And that was backed up then by Emma, mm-hmm. the, you know, head cheerleader. Because there are little steps that you take that if no one calls you out on the little steps, mm-hmm. emboldens you to take the next step.
Yeah.
And emboldens you to take the one after that.
Yeah.
And the one after that.
Yeah.
And that's this whole conversation around consent, this whole conversation around male entitlement.
Mm.
It's the whole conversation around male privilege is that every step that is taken that goes forward where no one says, wait a minute, that's not cool, gives you the permission to take the one after.
Yeah.
And so this behavior where, I mean, oh, he spits in her Coke, like she buys a drink and he spits in it and then hands it back to her to just really assert his power in this situation. And, you know, the principal saying that his behavior is annoying and, you know, everyone's saying it's annoying.
Yeah.
Well, annoying is the point before what he's doing.
Mm.
He's already taken more steps past annoying.
Mm.
And I think what women are asking for and demanding of men is to actually pull up their fellow men and say, this is not a women problem, this is a male problem.
Mm-hmm.
97% of violence against women is perpetrated by men. So I am not saying that women don't become violent against other women. We know in our own circle of friends that that is not true, that there are people who are misogynists, whether they are male or female.
Yeah.
But that...
And women can be violent toward men.
Absolutely.
And toxic relationships.
Absolutely. And... because it's about power.
Mm.
But most of the power is held by men.
Yep.
And therefore, the power to change this is also held by men.
Mm.
And so on watching this film, on feeling my rage, on not knowing what to do with myself, it is to call out whatever step comes before the one after it.
You want to be like Lucy?
I was louder than Lucy in my world, I think. I wasn't doing it behind a zine.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, I had a best friend who was very much like her friend Claudia in the film, who, you know, incredibly supportive, incredibly loving, didn't want to go that way, didn't feel that was the way that she wanted to progress things, but was always, always there and supportive and loving and kind and gentle and Grace, I love you. I'm getting emotional because boy, did I get through high school because of that woman.
Yeah.
But it's not about us as women
holding
everybody to account all the time. It's actually other men.
Yeah.
Because yes, you know perpetrators of violence. Yes, you know perpetrators of sexual misconduct. Yes, you know perpetrators. Whether you think you do or you don't, you do, because there are enough perpetrators that we women talk about and that we know about.
Yeah.
Because we all know survivors of all of these things.
Yeah.
If we're not one, we know one.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way that you, as a man, do not know a perpetrator of any of these kinds of behaviors.
Yeah.
And so how about every time you see someone taking a step towards this kind of behavior, you tell them that that's not what we do.
Yeah.
We don't do that. We don't talk like that. We don't say things like that. We revere women. We love women. We feel like we are equal to women. We don't feel like our masculinity is somehow diminished or our power is somehow diminished by a woman having a seat at the table. We actually are secure enough in our own manhood to know that we are strong, vulnerable, fabulous individuals who aren't emasculated by a woman actually taking a seat at the table.
Yeah.
When I think of the term man up, that's what I think of.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to see.
Yeah.
That's what I want my boys to be. That's who my husband is.
It's so reductive on the men.
Yeah.
It's so, like, even just the whole sexual thing. Don't you want to have sexual relationships with someone in which you feel like it's absolutely a partnership?
Mm.
It's actually a really grotty kind of mindset to be like, oh, we can't call out of any of that stuff. Let's just kind of normalize it, like, as though, oh, I'll never get laid again if I can't, you know, use my sort of various methods and privilege that I have to find a woman and somehow convince her to not be fully consenting. That's actually, it's a pretty disgusting lens to put on the whole thing.
And
but that's essentially what you're doing when you allow that kind of behavior to happen.
And in the film, is proven wrong by, you know, the one
love interest.
The love interest. There has to be, of course there is. It's a teen film. The love interest who is incredibly supportive, is incredibly manly and masculine and secure in who he is, understanding that he is an equal.
Mm.
When the women, the young women see that, are incredibly attracted to that.
Yeah.
You know, that is hot. Yeah. Somebody who knows who he is, who has integrity, who is a supporter, who is an ally.
Who shares your values.
Who shares your values.
For God's sake.
Yeah, it's such an important basis for a relationship, isn't it? Values sharing. You can be from anywhere and those things are fundamental and you can sort of spring anything from that.
Speaking of Vivian's best friend, is her name Claudia? I just want to call her Claudia because of Babysitter's Club.
Yeah, I know. And I wondered whether that was a little throwback, whether, because I imagine Paula was probably a Babysitter's Club lover in the same way that I was.
You threw me then for a minute. I was like, did you get that? Are we getting these things confused?
No.
Because for some, I made that parallel because I watched the Babysitter's Club series like probably 6 months back when it first came out on Netflix. I'm a massive, like, as a kid, Babysitter's Club fan.
Huge. Yes.
But I really like the way that, speaking of privilege and intersectionality, you know, Claudia has so much more to lose by sticking her neck out.
Yes.
Because of her heritage.
Yes.
Than what Vivian does because she's white.
Mm-hmm.
The whole at the window sort of scene where she's like, you wouldn't understand because you're white.
Yes.
Again, at first I was like, oh, it spins very like after school special. But I really, really like that scene.
Yeah, me too.
Because again, no one wants to say, you don't understand because you're white. Mm. Like, it's, oh, but no, it's true. It's all, you know, et cetera, post-racial, and it doesn't really matter. We all have different levels of privilege and risk.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree that men are the ones who need to be having these conversations, but there are also women who are in more of a position than other women to be able to use their voice powerfully as well.
And to raise the voices of other women who don't
absolutely
have the voice.
That is absolutely right, because I think that women who have experienced sexual assaults are just too pissed off and exhausted to keep having to go to these marches and raise the flag for themselves.
And traumatized.
Absolutely. Doesn't need to be their job.
No, absolutely not. And I loved at the end of the film, once again, spoiler, at the end of the film when she jumps up on that bollard and starts speaking, you know, as a privileged white girl, which she is. Yeah, she's from a single parent family, you know, she's from a broken home, but just the starting place is white. And that's a lottery that you win in a ridiculously racist world.
And raised by a feminist who's like, I am so proud that you are doing this thing, which not everyone's parents would.
Exactly. But she gets up on that thing and then relinquishes her spot. And then the next person gets up on that thing and relinquishes her spot. And it becomes this virtuous circle of women supporting women and lifting up other voices. And I just love that so much.
And by the way, we don't need to speak and we don't need to listen. We need solutions. And like, there's a lot of, oh, there's not many solutions. Like, I actually call bullshit on that. There's a whole bunch of solutions.
Yeah.
They're just solutions that people with the existing power don't want to believe in.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. Who wants to let go of the grip of their power seemingly?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, it's like that little box analogy about you can't kind of see from where you stand that some people are on lower or higher boxes relative to you.
Yep.
And we're not talking about like dethroning people, tumbling them from this incredibly high, you know, 10-foot high box to like nothing.
Mm-hmm.
We're just talking about taking it from a 10 to a 9 to an 8 to a 7.
Yeah.
It's not so much. It's not so much that you can't afford to give away.
Yes.
And what you gain is actually way more important.
Because it's not like the patriarchy's been doing great things for men.
Exactly. Smash it.
I do. There's anger. There's so much anger and that things haven't moved far enough.
Yeah.
And yet things are moving.
Yeah.
Right? I don't want to end this podcast with people thinking, oh, it's all shit. It's not. Can we talk about the fact that abortion laws have been, you know, abortion has been taken out of the criminal code in Queensland, finally.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened in Victoria, it's happened in Tasmania, I think, South Australia. There are things moving.
Mm-hmm.
Things are moving. We are making progress and we will keep making progress.
Yeah.
And the allyship is growing because I think people are realising this is not a system that benefits me either.
Yeah.
And that is a great thing.
Yeah.
And because we are a generation who is raising feminists.
Mm-hmm.
when we wrap up Moxie, I think it's a lovely film and I really enjoyed it. And it did speak to me as a Gen Xer of that whole maintain the rage thing.
Yeah.
I need to listen to more Bikini Kill, I think. That was very enjoyable. Good music in this film.
Yeah.
But that every step that is not addressed leads to the one afterwards.
That's right.
So address it now and save everybody the hassle. And save those people the hassle. Yeah. You know? They don't want to go to jail.
And Gandhi, be the change.
Be the change, right? Be the change.
Alrighty.
Until next time, Rach.
Stay rageful.
Stay rageful. But with action.
Yeah.
Rage with action.
Hug your babies, lift them up on your shoulders and give them a little placard.
Yeah, absolutely. and be kind to yourselves.
Be kind to yourselves.
And one another. And
love you.
Talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye.